Welcome to the German Beer Academy. Nice to have you here. Let's have a great time together.
Ever crack open a cold one and wonder, like, how did we get here? I mean, beer, it's ancient, right? But American beer, that's a whole other story.
It really is.
And yeah. We've got some incredible material from the German Beer Academy to dive into.
A treasure trove of beer history.
Ready to uncover some surprises about how American beer came to be?
Absolutely. And yeah. The story goes back way further than most people realize.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Take us back to the beginning.
Forget your six-packs for a minute and imagine this. Evidence of brewing in the Americas. Going back over 12,000 years.
12,000 years. Wow, that's like pre-pyramids, even pre-Stonehenge.
Right.
What were they brewing with back then?
Think cassava and maize.
Huh. Not your typical craft brew ingredients.
Not at all. Native Americans had their own brewing traditions long before any European influence.
Mm-hmm.
And these weren't just drinks either. They were deeply significant culturally and ceremonially.
So instead of ceremonial roasts, it was ceremonial brews. I'm trying to picture these ancient rituals, maybe a little chanting.
You're not far off. And there are some amazing accounts from European explorers who actually encountered these brewing traditions firsthand.
Oh, really? Like who?
Olfert Dapper, for instance, a writer back in the 1670s. He describes this South American beer called chicha, even details a four-day festival where this chicha flowed freely as part of their rituals.
Okay, now that's a party I would have loved to have witnessed. But here's the thing. If ancient Americans were brewing with these, like, unique ingredients for centuries, how did we end up with, well, what we usually find on the supermarket shelves today?
That's where the story takes a turn. European arrival, especially that wave of German immigrants, completely revolutionized American brewing.
Right. We all know those big German names on our beer labels, but what did they actually bring to the table, brewing-wise, I mean?
Okay, so picture this. It's a time when ales are king in America. Then along come these German immigrants, and they bring with them this revolutionary ingredient, lager yeast.
Lager versus ale. I see where this is going.
Right. This yeast was a game changer. It thrived in colder temperatures, perfect for the climate they found here. And it produced a totally different style of beer.
But people can be hesitant to embrace new things, right? Were American drinkers immediately on board with this whole lager thing?
Not quite. Remember that Mark Twain anecdote about the Irishman who absolutely believed that lager would kill him?
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious, but it also says a lot about the initial reaction to this new style of beer.
Exactly. It illustrates the cultural clash that was happening. This wasn't just about different ingredients. It was about tradition. Preferences. Imagine those pub debates back then, ale versus lager. Who knew yeast could be so divisive?
I know, right? I can practically hear those clinking tankards and spirited arguments. But this clash wasn't just happening in random pubs across America, was it? Were there like specific places where this whole brewing revolution really took hold?
Absolutely. And one city became a real hotbed for this brewing and cultural fusion, Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati. Really? Not exactly the first place that comes to mind when I think beer destination.
It might surprise you, but back then, Cincinnati was a major hub for German immigrants, and they brought their love of lager, their brewing traditions, to their new home. There's even a neighborhood in Cincinnati nicknamed Over the Rhine, is across the Miami and Erie Canal, and it became this central gathering place for those German immigrants.
So like beer gardens, lively conversation, a taste of Germany transplanted to America.
Exactly. It wasn't just about drinking beer. It was about holding onto a cultural identity in a new world. Each glass of lager was like a link to their homeland, you know, a testament to tradition.
It's amazing how something as simple as a beer can be packed with so much history and meaning. But let's be honest, there was a period in American history that almost wiped the slate clean for brewers' prohibition.
Prohibition, right. A time of gangsters and speakeasies, but also this really interesting counterpoint to what was happening in Germany with their own, like, temperance movements.
Okay, hold on. Gangsters and speakeasies, I get, but Germany had a temperance movement going on too. I always pictured them as all about the beer halls and Wumpa bands.
That's a common image for sure.
Yeah.
But even though Germany has always had this strong beer culture, they weren't immune to worries about alcohol, you know? But here's the thing. How they tackled it was totally different from the U.S.
So instead of going full-on prohibition, what did they do?
They were all about moderation, not a total ban.
Yeah.
There was a big focus on something called Brandt Weinpest, translates to liquor plague. It was basically what they called the social problems linked to, like, too much hard alcohol.
Liquor, plague, that's intense. So were they pushing beer as the, I don't know, safer alternative?
You got it. And get this, the German Brewers Federation, the Brauerbund, they actually saw the temperance folks as kind of on their side. Both groups wanted people to drink responsibly.
So it was like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Wow, that's a wild dynamic. But back in the U.S., we dove headfirst into prohibition. What happened to American beer during those dry years?
It was rough. Imagine a whole industry forced underground. Tons of breweries shut down, and the ones that made it had to get creative, brewing that near beer with the, what is it, 0.5% alcohol limit? Huh. A straight-up legacy of prohibition laws, by the way.
Wait, that random number we see on labels today, it's because of prohibition.
Yep. It's crazy how these historical events stick around in weird ways. But yeah, those brewers who survived had to navigate a whole new world.
It must have been a whirlwind when Prohibition ended in 33. Suddenly, everyone's thirsty again. Did the American beer scene just pick back up where it left off?
Not really. I mean, sure, people wanted beer, but things had changed. Lots of those smaller breweries were gone, which opened the door for the bigger companies to move in.
Ah, so this is where we see the rise of the mega brands that are everywhere today.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Companies like Anheuser-Busch, they had new tech, like pasteurization, refrigerated trucks. Mm-hmm. They were ready to meet that demand, but on a huge scale.
Like a perfect storm. Prohibition wipes out the competition, and these big players are ready to take over. But even with all that happening, something else was brewing, right? What about the people who started what would become craft beer?
Yes. This is where folks like Charlie Papazian and Jack McAuliffe enter the picture. Papazian, he was a champion of home brewing, you know. He had this joy of brewing thing, this whole philosophy, and it got a whole generation excited about making their own beer. It became accessible, fun. Mm-hmm. He wanted people to experiment.
That's what I love about the craft beer world, the passion and creativity. But wasn't there a particular brewery that was like a symbol of this early craft movement?
For sure. Jack McAuliffe and his brewery, New Albion Brewing Company, founded in 76. It's considered by many to be the first modern craft brewery in America.
A real pioneer. What made New Albion so special? Were their beers just that innovative?
It was more their attitude. McAuliffe, he challenged the way things were done. He proved that you could brew flavorful small batch beer that was totally different from the mass produced stuff out there.
David versus Goliath. It's sad that New Albion eventually closed, but their influence continued, right? Who else carried that craft beer torch?
One name stands out. Fritz Maytag. He's the guy who saved Anchor Steam from going under. He saw something special in that historic San Francisco brewery and his dedication to quality, to tradition. Well, it really helped start a new chapter for American beer.
Anchor Steam, I've heard the name, but what are they known for? Didn't they pretty much only make one type of beer?
That's what's so interesting. See, Maytag wasn't happy just bringing back one beer style. He wanted to rediscover the forgotten ones, you know? Under him, Anchor Steam brought back porter, barley wine, even early versions of what we know today as IPAs.
Wait, so you're saying Anchor Steam is partly why we have this whole IPA craze today?
It really shows you Maytag's vision. He knew brewing wasn't about chasing fads. It was about respecting the history while trying new things. And that idea, it resonated with a whole new batch of brewers.
It's like Anchor Steam bridged the gap between classic styles and the explosion of craft beers we see now. But this wasn't just an American thing, was it? How did this craft beer revolution go global?
It was all about inspiration crossing borders. European brewers, especially in Italy, they saw what was up in the U.S. and were inspired to breathe new life into their own brewing traditions.
The material we have mentions Italian brewers like Agostino Arioli. What did they do for the craft beer movement?
Arioli, he's the one who came up with Tippelpools, right?
Mm.
Sounds like a really cool blend of Italian and German brewing, like a cultural mashup you can drink.
It really was groundbreaking. He was inspired by German pilsners, yeah. But then he used Italian ingredients, Italian brewing methods.
Yeah.
It creates something totally new.
So it wasn't just about copying styles.
No, not at all. Arioli, like a lot of craft brewers, he was into those forgotten styles, the ones nobody was really brewing anymore. He even created a dark wheat beer with English hops called Voodoo. Okay, Voodoo. Now that's a cool name for a beer. But English hops in an Italian beer. Sounds like these brewers were taking inspiration from all over.
They were. And that's what's so great about craft beer.
Right.
It's not about sticking to some rigid national style guide. It's about pushing those boundaries, rediscovering things, making something new and delicious.
So we've gone from those ancient brews made with cassava to this global movement where Italian brewers are playing with English hops.
It's pretty amazing, right?
Mind-boggling. But this global exchange, it wasn't just the ingredients and how they were brewing, was it? Even the way we drink beer changed.
You think about glassware.
Yeah, like the Tiku glass. Those are everywhere now. What's the story there?
The Tiku glass is a great example of that global collaboration. Teo Musso, another Italian craft brewer, he got together with Lorenzo Quasca de Bove, this renowned beer sensory expert.
Okay, sensory expert. Yeah.
So they teamed up to design a glass made to enhance how you experience the aromas and flavors of craft beers.
So it's like the ultimate craft beer tasting glass. Form and function, all in the name of deliciousness.
Exactly. Everything about it, the shape of the bowl, the rim, even how thick the glass is, it's all designed for the best possible sensory experience.
Wow, there's a whole science behind it. Makes sense, though. Craft beer is all about those nuances in flavor and aroma.
It really is. And the Tiku glass, it's become like a symbol of that whole movement. You see them everywhere now. Fancy beer bars, home brewers. Mm-hmm. It's a reminder that craft beer is about appreciating every part of the experience.
Speaking of appreciation, we haven't talked much about how Germany reacted to this whole craft beer wave. I mean, they practically invented beer. Did American craft brewers make them nervous?
It's not so simple. Germany, with their history, they saw it a bit differently. For them, it wasn't so much about, you know, rebelling against the way things were. It was about building on what they already had.
So instead of feeling threatened, German brewers saw craft beer as a chance for more innovation.
That's a good way to put it. They were down to experiment, but still honor their brewing traditions. Uh-huh. Like a great example is the Hopfenweiss that George Schneider, a traditional Bavarian brewer, created with Garrett Oliver, big-time American craft brewer.
A German and an American brewer working together, like a beer summit.
It really was this awesome collaboration. They took that classic German Weiss beer and added the big hop aroma of an American IPA. Proof that cross-cultural exchange can lead to something really special. Celebrates both tradition and new ideas.
That's really cool. It seems like the whole craft beer movement has created this amazing global community, brewers and beer lovers all connected.
It really has. But with craft breweries popping up left and right, it makes you wonder, what's next?
That's the big question, isn't it? Will craft beer stay its own thing, or will it become, you know, just part of the mainstream?
It's hard to say. We've already seen big companies buying up smaller craft breweries. I mean, on the one hand, that gets those beers out to more people.
Yeah.
But then you have to wonder about staying true to that independent spirit, right? Yeah.
It's a balancing act for sure. But like you said before, it's really up to us as consumers, the choices we make, that shape where beer goes next.
Absolutely. If we keep looking for interesting beers, support those small breweries, stay curious, well, then the future of beer will be just as exciting and delicious as its past.
I think that's the perfect way to wrap things up. This deep dive into American beer history has been amazing.
A wild ride, right?
Totally. Who knew there were so many twists and turns, so much creativity, influences from all over the world?
It really shows you the power of beer, how it's brought people together for, what, thousands of years?
So true. So to everyone listening, next time you raise a glass, whether it's a crisp Pilsner, a hoppy IPA, even a traditional chicha, think about that journey for a minute. Cheers.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening and see you soon in the Academy.